The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You look back in 2017, you saw that the Democrats had leaped up to an 8-point advantage. I remember covering this. I remember a lot of folks, including myself, saying, you know what? Republicans look pretty decent right now in terms of the fact that they had the House, they had the Senate, they had the presidency, but things were likely going to flip. And I was looking for the same signs this year. The bottom line is it hasn't happened, Kate Baldwin. It hasn't happened. Democrats have stayed basically steady. They have fallen off the pace. Democrats were way out ahead back in 2017 on the generic congressional ballot. And now we're basically looking at Democrats ahead. But again, they are so far in back of the pace that they set back there. And so I think what a lot of folks are seeing, folks like myself, are saying, wait a minute, given what we might be seeing in redistricting, is this plus three going to be enough? First off, net mid-decade redistricting gains. If both sides max out at this point, there are more Republican gains possible than Democratic gains. Yes, the Democrats might try to counter a Texas and a California, but you go along in the different states and basically Democrats run out of room where Republicans are able to gain and gain and gain the Voting Rights Act. If you add that in, then you could be looking about adding 10, 12, 15, 17 on top of this 7 seats. So I think a lot of folks like myself are looking at this. We're seeing, hey, wait a minute. Those national polls are Democrats are not gaining the way that we expected.
The population is dwindling so that rational Republicans are now a completely endangered species at the risk of becoming extinct.
Yeah, we don't want, kangaroo courts and trumped up charges. That's what happens in other places that we used to scold for doing that. We want like our court system and our Justice Department and our prosecutors to be and our FBI to be just playing things straight and looking at the facts and not meddling in politics the way we've seen lately.
The people on my special counsel team were like that. The idea that politics played a role in who worked on that case or who got chosen is ludicrous. And Andrew, and this is another thing that I think if you're not inside the U.S. Department of Justice, the idea that politics would play a role in big cases like this, it's absolutely ludicrous, and it's totally contrary to my experience as a prosecutor.
That is and a decent, resume, but go ahead.
But there, well, some people have actually said I was the most qualified candidate ever to run for president.
I like the some people say. Very nice, but go ahead.
I'm just speaking fact.
Yeah.
House Republicans shut the government down. Then they ran out of town. And for the last 3 weeks, they're nowhere to be found.
I think that last bit would work well in a Dr. Seuss book. How about that? I don't know if it's Trump derangement syndrome or just plain derangement, but there's your Democrat Party of today. They are as unpopular and as powerless as they've been in a long, long time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. A lot to get to. I'm going to try to weave together some. There's always a bit of negative news to discuss. Negative in the sense that, you know, it's not pretty for this world, for our nations, for individuals, for families. But it is positive in the sense that it leads up to the return of Jesus Christ. But at the same time, there's also some positive storylines that I'd like to, as I say, weave in. Richard Palmer had this great piece today, I think, maybe last night, on just how much of a blessing responsibility is. Hopefully I'll have time to get to that. And then also, we heard a wonderful message at the Feast of Tabernacles about a message that's delivered through architecture. And of course, right now, President Trump, you'll hear some clips later where he's really serious about the ballroom, and he's excited to show people the newly renovated Oval Office and the White House. He gives tours frequently. He gave one to Bibi Netanyahu, even after they had these intense negotiations. I mean, he wants the world to see these impressive structures. And I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. It is a godly principle or message. God is going to send a message to this world through architecture in the wonderful world tomorrow. It's a beautiful, beautiful message. But just coming back to the negative, or in the case of the Democrat Party, I mean, more and more, it's just becoming a punchline, a joke. I was telling Sam this morning, you know, it used to be, it wasn't that long ago, President Trump hasn't even been back in office for a year yet. And it used to be that we would comb through these clips of these radical communist Democrats and try to put them on this show so that we could expose their lies and deceit. But anymore, you hear them talk and it's just a big joke. Kamala saying that some have said I was the most qualified candidate ever. I mean, what are these people thinking? Derangement, as I say. Desperation. You hear it. You hear it. And with all this talk about the Voting Rights Act being gutted by the Supremes, and we know that Jeroboam is receiving support from the kingdom's court, Amos 7, and then all the redistricting that's going on, and you hear these headlines or see them about the Democrats perhaps losing 19, 20 more seats just because of redistricting, just because of Republicans straightening out all the gerrymandering that the Democrats have gotten away with for years. I mean, for decades. Nobody challenges them. I mean, these people, they cheat and they lie as a way of life. And now they've been exposed. And so more and more, as I say, they're just a punchline. But listen, it's also much more serious than a joke. Because what will they do when they realize they can't regain power? And when they realize they're so obviously unpopular, well, they're going to resort to violence. Herbert Armstrong, when writing about the communist infiltration of the United States years ago, decades ago, he was saying if they could bring about this radical transformation through the voting booth, they'd do it. But if they can't do that, they will resort to violence. Listen to this exchange from MSNBC, clip 8.
Time is running out. Americans need to act now. There needs to be some sort of movement now to reclaim our ideals, to reclaim what we stand for before it's lost, potentially, he warns, for generations.
I think, you know, the No Kings rallies this weekend, we're going to see millions of people are going to be out. We've seen this. The protest movements have been growing. At the same time, we're seeing, you know, this militarization, increasing militarization of law enforcement and troops in America's streets. There's no doubt that we are headed towards clashes of some kind, and not far off from now. I think the Trump administration wants some of those clashes. We are headed towards a conflict, a clash in the streets. One side really wants it, and the fact that it's the administration, which has if not the monopoly, has a very strong hold on lethal force and force itself, is a profoundly disconcerting and worrying situation. But it may be necessary to have some kind of clash if we're going to get to what David Brooks is talking about, what we need to hold on here.
It may be necessary, you see, to have some kind of clash. Now we're back to where the Democrats have historically been. They are pro-violence. There's a four-hour exception to it. January 6, 2021. Then they're very much pro-law enforcement for 4 hours. But the history shows us that they love them some violence. They sure do. They love division and strife. It's of the devil. Never have we seen such hatred between American people. This is my father writing back at the tail end of the first term for Donald Trump. March 2020, at the trumpet. All this ought to terrify every American. Many revolutions end in a civil war filled with suffering and death. That's where we're headed. That's what Ezekiel 5 prophesies. And that's what my father talks about here in this article. In America's civil war, neither side will win. Bible prophecy thunders a deadly message that an enemy nation will conquer us. I mean, the weaker and weaker we are from within, the more vulnerable we are to attacks from without. And that's going to come too. It's all laid out in the United States and Britain in prophecy. It's the key. That book gives you the key to unlocking Bible prophecy. A third of your Bible is prophecy. And that's why you need this booklet. Because it's like it decodes those prophecies. And you can understand the Bible. And you can see where we fit in all of these prophecies of God. So many of them are being fulfilled. I mean, this is why we spoke so strongly and so boldly, really, for 4 years, saying that Donald Trump would return to office. It was prophesied. The resurgence is prophesied. I talked some about this yesterday. And even in the building and the architecture, I mean, Donald Trump is he's a real estate tycoon. He's a builder. He's a man with vision. It says here, America's current president, Donald Trump, is fighting back against radicalism and having some success. Perhaps the most important is the way he's exposing the crimes and the evils of the radical left. I mean, how timely is this article from 5 years ago? It applies to today more than ever. He's exposing the evil of the radical left and he's cracking down on them. And as you heard there or saw in the montage, they don't like it. They're saying it's time to fight back. They're calling for violence. They're calling for clashes. This is not new. I mean, we've played the montages before. Nancy Pelosi and others saying, I just can't understand why there aren't uprisings all over the country. They like uprisings. When it resists against the opposition, the political party that they hate more than any group, terrorist organization in the world. Donald Trump, that's public enemy number one. The way they see it, says here, the resurgence in America today is causing some people to grow complacent. That is a grave mistake. I mean, look at what again, it's easy to just make them the butt of a joke, but look at what they're saying. Look at how they're resisting ICE officials just going in and sending illegals back home or to some other place. They love the criminals. They love the illegals. And they're prepared to fight back against ICE or Donald Trump or whoever. It says here, Mr. Armstrong wrote this. Of course, if it could do this, talking about the communist overthrow of the country, the government, the communist infiltration, he says, if it could do this peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. So it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. That's from The Plain Truth in 1962. How about that? 60-some years ago? That's right. He was right on top of the communist infiltration of the United States. You can read more about that in our booklet. He was right. He was. He was right. And we were right, too, when we said it was going to be so bitter, the affliction, that God would have to send a Jeroboam type to save America. And that's what he did. That's fulfilled prophecy. You talk about a positive storyline here, a positive thread to bring out in the midst of all of this clashing and violence, defending criminals, lawlessness, anarchy. Fulfilled prophecy, that's one of the great proofs of God's existence. That's why we talk about it so much. It says here, in the decades that passed, since Mr. Armstrong wrote those words, the nation degenerated so far that radicals were able to win at the polls. They won the highest office in America twice. That's talking about Barack Hussein Obama, the dear leader. People don't swoon like they used to. Why is that? I'm old enough to remember, you know, talking heads, talking about, you know, tingling going up their legs. The moment the dear leader spoke, I mean, whatever he said, he could say no wrong. He could do no wrong. And now he's been exposed. It says, but then their attempt to overthrow the country was thwarted. So now more people are talking, like actor James Cromwell, who said, if we don't stop President Trump, then we will have a revolution for real. Then there will be blood in the streets. We've got to stop Trump. We've got a clash. We need violence. We need the violent overthrow of the government. And that's what they're saying. Listen to this Fox News report on the crime and violence in Chicago that President Trump wants to crack down on. Who could disagree with that, or who could resist that? Answer, a lot of people, if you're a Democrat. Clip 9.
Meanwhile, federal agents firing tear gas to break up a violent protest in Chicago.
This standoff in the street happening after two illegal migrants from Venezuela were arrested for allegedly ramming their vehicle into a Border Patrol SUV.
Todd Pyro joins us with more. Todd.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be getting better in the Windy City. Good morning to all three of you. Illinois Democrat Governor J.B. Pritzker blasting federal agents for using tear gas to disperse violent crowds of anti-ICE rioters. Pritzker saying, quote, ICE is recklessly throwing tear gas into our neighborhoods and busy streets. The Trump administration must stop their deployment of dangerous chemical weapons into the air of peaceful American communities. But those protests were anything but peaceful. Prior to the deployment of the tear gas, Chicago police were trying to de-escalate an anti-ICE mob when people in the crowd began getting violent. Chicago PD confirming the incident, saying, quote, individuals began throwing objects at the federal agents, at which point the federal agents deployed tear gas into the street. Now, this mob began to form after the arrest of two illegal migrants that DHS says rammed their vehicle into a Border Patrol SUV and then attempted to flee the scene. The driver and the passenger involved in the pursuit were Venezuelan nationals who entered the country illegally. The driver, an ICE fugitive, who was ordered to be removed in August of last year. Once the two were taken into custody, that crowd began to form. DHS saying, quote, the incident is not isolated and reflects a growing and dangerous trend of illegal aliens violently resisting arrest and criminals ramming cars into our law enforcement officers.
All through the auto pen years, we were talking about this being an invasion, and you see it. It is. It's being revealed as that, even as we speak. They're at war with law enforcement officials here in America. And then Governor Pritzker, for his part, he's defending the criminals. He's defending the illegals. He's telling Donald Trump, you tell ICE to stop with the tear gas, even as these illegals are ramming them. Anti-ICE mobs. They're all over the country fighting against law enforcement. As I say, the Democrats have a history where there's only four hours where they were supportive of law enforcement. The rest is as we see today. Let the criminals out of prison, open the borders at the South, let everybody in, even the criminals. And then if there's a crackdown, I mean, send the criminals to fight against ICE and defend them. That's what we're seeing. This is from yesterday. I didn't have time to get to it, but it's with respect to law enforcement in Boston coming under fire. Clip 10.
They were throwing explosives, like firework-looking explosives. All, like, the people were out running, and there was about probably 25, 30 cop cars. But that cop car lighting on fire because of the explosives was insane.
Boston cops under attack when a street takeover descends into chaos. At one point, agitators shoot fireworks at a squad car, causing it to burst into flames. Look at that, with an officer trapped inside. Now, as the crowd continued to wreak havoc, two suspects, an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old, were arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer.
A month ago, we wrote at the Trumpet, over and again, with growing intensity and frequency, the left is showing itself angry, hateful, unhinged, violent, even murderous. It says here, Charlie Kirk's assassination has awakened many on the right to this terrible reality. They're angry and they want to fight back. The nation has not been this close to civil war in over 150 years. It says this assassination referring to Kirk, combined with the two Trump assassination attempts last year, is a sign of a nation on the verge of a bloodbath. We've got to look at the signs. We've got to point you to the signs, what we're seeing, what's building, where this is leading, where it's headed. And of course, Bible prophecy gives us the framework within which we offer our assessment, our analysis, our predictions. And that's not even the right word for it. Because if it's prophecy from God, it's sure, the sure word of Bible prophecy. That's in 2 Peter. Listen to one more on targeting ICE officials. This is clip 11.
So Attorney General Pam Bondi says Facebook has removed the page that was being used to target ICE agents in Chicago. The move comes as the DHS reveals cartels have issued bounties for hits on officers. Griff Jenkins joins us from Washington with the latest on this story. Griff, what do you know?
Well, good morning, Lawrence. I know the threat to ICE and federal immigration law enforcement has never been higher. DHS says there's now this tiered bounty system set up by Mexican cartels. Take a look. They're offering $2,000 for gathering intelligence or doxing immigration agents, $5,000 to $10,000 for kidnapping of standard ICE officers, and up to $50,000 for the assassination of a high-ranking officer. This after an alleged Latin Kings gang member is accused of putting a bounty on Border Patrol's commander-at-large Greg Bovino. $2,000 on info on him, $10,000 if you can, quote, take him down. Now, the gang member's attorney denies any ties to the Latin Kings and paints the man as a, quote, hardworking family man, but Chief Bovino refutes that claim and says things are actually getting worse.
Griff, the Latin Kings are associated with drug cartels, i.e. terrorist organizations, so those bounties remain and, in fact, have actually increased because of this, quote, hardworking man. It's unbelievable.
Meanwhile, in the wake of anti-ICE riots in places like Chicago and Portland, AG Bondi announcing Facebook has removed an ICE spotting group targeting officers. She writes on X, the wave of violence against ICE has been driven by online apps and social media campaigns designed to put ICE officers at risk just for doing their jobs.
Just remember this when you hear all the talk, the diplomats talking about peace. Peace spreading. America's at war. America, we're at war with the cartels, with the illegals. ICE agents are being targeted. They're using apps, bounties, hits, targeted hits on ICE officials in Portland, in Chicago, at a city near you, no doubt. Siding with the criminal, this article, the one I had a month ago, Charlie Kirk's murder shows America approaching civil war. That's what it reveals. I mentioned yesterday we visited that university in Utah where he was assassinated. And you just walk around the grounds and, you know, there's a makeshift memorial that's been put there. And it's just kind of eerie because, as I said yesterday, you go through the community and it seems like it's your ordinary, you know, middle-income community where it's fairly safe and somewhat prosperous. And as we learned over a month ago, violent as well. An assassination on a 31-year-old father and husband who promoted family and the Bible and the Sabbath. President Trump, by the way, presented his wife with, I forget the name of the medal, but the presidential medal. After Charlie Kirk's death, he honored him the other day. I think it was his 32nd birthday. We've got some clips on that and on the religious revival that we're seeing in the country. We probably won't have time to get there again today, but hopefully tomorrow. But this is the world we're living in. This article from a month ago, God had to dramatically intervene in human affairs to save Donald Trump from assassination. That didn't happen with respect to Charlie Kirk. And as it happens, I mean, his assassination has only fueled this evangelical
uprising, the popularity of religion in the United States. But as we know, religion is not going to solve the many problems that we're facing in so many ways. Religion is part of the problem. This is quoting Hosea 4, verses 2 and 3. It says, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. This is what's prophesied for our day. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it. Lying, adultery, swearing, killing, stealing. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwells therein shall languish. I mean, when you have the elites calling for violence, calling for clashes, nobody's going to win in that kind of hateful environment. The land is going to mourn. It says this means that bloody crimes are set to get worse if people do not repent. I mean, this is what God's looking for, repentance. I went through part of that article yesterday from 11 years ago. The world is descending into chaos. God's trying to get our attention. He wants us to turn to Him in repentance. My father wrote, even the ambassadors of peace are just trying to use human reasoning and pressure to stabilize things so everyone can get back to luxuriating inside their sealed houses. Yeah, there's, I mean, and you hear it even from the Trump administration. I've got clips later where he's talking about how much peace he's brought to this world. And in the very next statement, or at least during the same speech, he's also talking about how many weapons the United States is building. I mean, how do you give a message, a speech, a sermon, talking about, on the one hand, there's peace everywhere, and oh, by the way, we've got a lot of powerful weapons for war. That's what we're hearing. It's about to explode. The world is. Our nation is. You listen to Bill Maher, this is from the other night, and I mean, as many commented online, it's true. Nobody even talks about Nigeria. Who cares about Nigeria? Where's the campus protest for for the genocide happening in Nigeria? Listen to clip 5.
If you don't know what's going on in Nigeria, mm-hmm. your media sources, you are in a bubble. And again, I'm not a Christian, but they are systematically yep. killing the Christians in Nigeria. They've killed over 100,000 since 2009. They've burned 18,000 churches. This is so much more. These are their Islamists, Boko mm-hmm. Haram. This is so much more of a genocide attempt than what is going on in Gaza. They are literally attempting to wipe out the Christian population of an entire country. Where are the kids protesting this?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. No one will talk about it, so thank you.
Absolutely.
It's Africa. That's why no one's talking about it, and they should be. You can't read about it in mainstream media. It's sad, so thank you for bringing it up.
Well, because the Jews aren't involved. That's why. It's the Christians and the Muslims. Who cares?
Here's a comedian, you know, actually giving some hard truths, dropping a few truth bombs. They don't care at the university where Charlie Kirk was gunned down. They don't care about Nigeria because, well, there's no Jews to attack. There's no Jews to persecute. So just let them continue slaughtering Christians in Nigeria. We are headed for a Crusades-level war. You can be sure that while no one else is paying attention, I think the Catholic Church probably is, seeing Christians slaughtered in Nigeria. Where is this leading? It's easy to get distracted when you're inside your sealed house, as my father wrote. Or when you're hearing everyone say, yeah, there's peace like there's never been peace. The hostages have been released. Problem solved. Well, as I covered yesterday, look at what happens in Gaza. The moment Israel leaves, a return to chaos, a return to tyranny, a return to targeted killings, murder. That's all over the world. Listen to President Trump yesterday talking about you know, their pursuit of peace. I mean, he's very happy. He's satisfied with what they've been able to accomplish with the peace agreements they've been able to make. And again, I don't want to take away from some of the tension that he's dialed down, but we got to look long term at where things are leading, and we have to learn from the lessons of history as well. Here's clip one.
Sort of interesting. I'll be the only president. I don't think any president has stopped one war. I stopped 8 wars in 8 months. Did I get a Nobel Prize? No. I said, can you believe it? Even I said, yeah, that's an impossible one. But it's all right. I suspect they think next year will be better, but I don't care. You know what I care about? I saved maybe hundreds of millions of lives, but certainly I saved millions of lives. So we're very happy about it.
Again, the motivation is sincere. And in the short term, when the guns stop firing, there are lives that are not being, you know, killed, obviously. But what is the long-term prospect for peace? Are we headed for worldwide peace, or is it worldwide war? Well, again, you got to go back to the United States and Britain in prophecy. Look at what the Bible says about the last days, great tribulation. You can read it in Matthew 24, Luke 21, 2 Timothy 3, Revelation 6. I mean, those are all New Testament passages I just rattled off. It's all through the Bible. Jesus, there were dozens and dozens of prophecies pointing to the first coming of Jesus Christ. And he literally came to this earth in the flesh. In the form, God came in the form of Jesus Christ. And then John 14 says, if I go, he was crucified and resurrected from the dead, ascended to heaven, he's at the right hand of God. And Jesus told his disciples before he left, if I go, I am coming again. Why don't more religious people see this or preach this? Or how do they spiritualize it away and say that the kingdom of God or the coming of Christ is something that just happens in your heart? In your heart? No, he's coming back to this earth in a literal sense, just like he came to this earth the first time to prepare the way, to prepare his disciples, to teach them, to train them, to rule, to train them how to teach others, to give them courage and strength in time of trial and test. And you go right down the line. You look at how the world received the prophets of old. And of course, I say received, but the thing of it is, they didn't receive the prophets. They rejected Christ. They rejected Peter. They rejected Paul. The true church down through the ages, it's been largely scattered and on the run. You can read all about that in A True History of God's True Church. It's another book we offer freely. No cost, no obligation. Get the true history of God's church. Satan goes after God's church, and he often uses violence to try to blot it out. And that's what we see on earth today. It's filled with violence. You listen to the president talk about peace, and again, you can't doubt or question his sincerity. But then, like I say, in the very same speech, listen to what else he discusses. Clip two.
We've had an amazing time. It's the most powerful nation on earth now. You see that? You see the weapon? We have the greatest weapons, the greatest manufacturer of weapons. Some of you are in that world, and some of you, yeah, the greatest in the world. We have the greatest in the world. I wish we could make them faster, if you want to know the truth. Everybody, all of our allies want them, and they want them as quick as they can.
All of our allies want these weapons, and they want them as quick as they can get them. And I wish we could build the weapons faster. What? So, I mean, again, MAGA's probably cheering them on. Yeah, what American thinking the right way doesn't want to have a powerful nation? But he's admitting there that it takes military power. It takes military power. to stay in the top position, top dog. You've got to have the firepower. That's just the law of the world. The history of humanity has been, in so many ways, a history of war, a history of warfare. And so, you know, when you're talking about peace, it seems like a more realistic view would be, well, okay, we did stop the firing. We did stop the shooting. But, you know, it's not going to last. It's not going to be eternal. Because look at our history. Look at the history of human civilization. Look at the history of conflict between Hamas and Israel. Hamas was established in 1987 for the sole purpose of killing Jews. And then Israel, the Jews, they leave Gaza. And well, I guess a secondary purpose for Hamas is to kill Palestinians who resist them, who oppose them. Yeah, just line them up on their knees on the street and bring in the firing squad and gun them down. That happened on Monday, the same day that the hostages were returned. And all that we saw were the clips of family members embracing Jews that had been in captivity for 2 years. And of course, those are warm scenes. And everybody, well, except for those who hate Jews, and that's quite a number of people in this world, everybody no doubt was rejoicing. But as I said earlier, I mean, what about the reunion scenes between those terrorists that were let out of prison and returned to their families in Gaza or wherever? Palestinian terrorists. I mean, it's like Hamas got another brigade or something this week. 1,700 that had been arrested and detained since October 7, and then another 250 hardened terrorists that were serving life sentences. That's 2,000. That's a 2,000-man army. And yet you've got people talking about eternal peace in the Middle East. This article from the Wall Street Journal. Netanyahu says he won the war, but can he win the peace? Netanyahu is now at maximum a year away from what is certain to be another difficult election, though he might call a vote sooner to capitalize on the surge of goodwill from the return of the hostages. And so here we are. We've got a momentary blip of peace, and you've got Benjamin Netanyahu, who against all the odds after October 7, I mean, he basically reformed the Middle East using some powerful weapons. Well, there you go. Some weapons. I mean, and people want those weapons, as President Trump said. Allies want the weapons. So do the enemies, by the way. Everybody wants weapons, and we're making them fast. We're mass producing them. We can't do it quick enough. Where's this leading? We've got to be honest and straightforward with you. When human beings create weapons, they use them, okay? They use them. They use them to kill other human beings. And so when they talk about peace, you can see why the ambassadors of peace eventually will weep bitterly, just as the Bible says. Again, go back and read 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 3. This article says, critics of Netanyahu, 75 years old, say he isn't the man for peace. This is, again, this is not Haaretz in Israel. This is the Wall Street Journal. Somewhat conservative. He remains too controversial at home and in the region and is still dogged by corruption cases in which he denies wrongdoing. You see, they're targeting Bibi, just like they target Trump, just like they target ICE here in the States. Bibi's the problem. Okay, now the firing has stopped, so let's get Bibi out. It says here, I don't think he appreciates just how hard it will be to get Bibi to move. In many ways, this is quoting some guy about Donald Trump, who clearly wants to move on to the next stage of Middle East diplomacy. And he's going to have a really tough time dragging Netanyahu there. So Bibi's got his plans, his designs, and we've seen a lot of it the last 2 years. And President Trump and his people, even though the relationship might be relatively close, you got to believe that Bibi knows in his heart of hearts that he should have finished the job, that he should have finished off Hamas. But he couldn't quite do it. Too much pressure from the president of the United States, who wants peace desperately. You heard him allude there to the Nobel Peace Prize. He wanted that. And next year when it comes around, he's going to want it again. And so how many more peace agreement papers? That's all that it is, a piece of paper. How many more pieces of paper will they sign over the next 12 months? Well, we'll see. It's probably going to be quite a few. It says here, in many ways, Netanyahu's room for maneuver is limited. As a politician, the war's end and return of the hostages is likely to give him a bump in popularity, yet he remains a broadly unpopular leader who will likely face a reckoning with the Israeli public over failing to prevent the Hamas-led attacks on October 7. So now things simmer down and it's easy to point fingers at Netanyahu. The one man, and again, he's not a perfect leader. October 7 did happen on his watch. The prisoner swap for Shalit back in 2014, that happened under his watch. They gave the butcher to Hamas, Sinwar. They gave the butcher to Hamas in exchange for Shalit, one Jewish hostage. And it wasn't just the butcher. It was like 1,000 other prisoners. Lopsided prisoner swaps. Did that solve the Middle East conflict 10 years ago? Or did it just pave the way for October 7? Well, you know the answer to that. Sinwar was the mastermind of October 7. This is not solvable. When you're talking about human beings with human nature, this is not a solvable conflict or problem. Just the opposite. My father has said that he doesn't think Bibi's going to be around when Israel allies itself with Germany, this German coalition, this German-led conglomerate in the Middle East. So perhaps that means, you know, Bibi is on the way out at some point. I mean, he's one of the few strong lion-like leaders. And the way they go after him and attack him, you know that Satan hates that lion-like character, that lion-like courage. My father wrote in that Israel's Rising Lion, I think this is from a few months ago, July or August, he said, I believe that just as God used the courage of Churchill to save Western civilization, God has used the fighting spirit of Netanyahu to hold off the atomic forces of evil. And so God did use this man to hold off these evil forces. And in a lot of ways, like he's used President Trump to expose and to prevent the dear leader's radical transformation of the United States. In a lot of ways, I mean, both of these individuals are like restraining forces, like the one mentioned in 2 Thessalonians 2. We saw it in the church. When you've got strong leadership, you know, in the case of Herbert Armstrong, I mean, he was holding back a lot of evil. And then look at what happened as soon as he died in 1986. I mean, it was like an overnight transformation in that church. It shows you how important leadership is. I mean, in this case, it's not perfect leadership. It's not world tomorrow leadership. But God does work through men. God's purpose stands. God's plan unfolds according to his prophetic, sure word. If Israel runs Bibi out of town, that's not going to be good looking at it long term. You look at how much Barack Obama hated Benjamin Netanyahu. Even so many of his own people hate him. There's quite a few in the Trump administration. I mean, there's the rising tide of hatred for Jews in general. Lee Smith wants to talk to us about this. You see it in the MAGA party, the MAGA movement. It's pretty well split. Those that support the Jews or Israel and its cause, and those who think that this man right here is the cause of the conflict, the problems. Netanyahu has warned for decades that Iran is close to having a bomb. A major reason they did not get one, long ago was Netanyahu's lion-like fighting spirit. He just won't let it happen because he knows what happens when they get the weapons. You see, they didn't have a nuclear bomb on October 7, but they had guns, they had knives, they had fighters, they had terrorists. And also, they had a lot of civilians pour into southern Israel to loot the place. So you had the terrorists killing Jews, and then you have just the ordinary Palestinians, that's all. They're just there to steal, to rob, to loot. And also to tell the terrorists, hey, there's a Jew over there behind the tree, go kill him. Benjamin Netanyahu is the rising lion of Israel. The world would be in a much more dangerous place without him. It is a terrible shame that almost everyone hates him, even within his own country. Even his own country, they hate him. I mentioned that we'd try, we've only got, 8 minutes left. We'd try to weave in some positive threads, just to switch back to President Trump. Speaking yesterday as he was talking about this phenomenal ballroom that he wants to build adjacent to the White House. And I mean, again, if you've seen Mar-a-Lago, and I had a chance a couple years ago to tour through that property, and it's glorious. And you know, President Trump purchased it and refurbished it and renovated it over the years. And you can see it was done by a man with vision. A man who knows there's a message in architecture. Listen to clip 3.
I said, if I make it back, I want to build a ballroom for the country, really, because this is really, they call it the people's house. It's the country's house. I want to build a ballroom. It needs it badly. And a ballroom that could seat 600 or 700 people so that when you have state dinners or more, if it's possible. And so we're going to have a phenomenal ballroom. This is going to be one of the best anywhere in the world. There won't be anything like it, actually. And it's four sides of glass, well, glass, beautiful glass, but totally appropriate in color and in window shape and everything else with the White House, moldings. So it's going to be very much in keeping with the White House.
Yeah, what a grand vision. It's hard to pick that apart. The only thing I would add is that this is something that typically happens, you know, in a nation that's at peace. You know, when there's peace and prosperity, you build, you grow the empire. And the point I would make with that is, as my father has written, you know, we don't want to be lulled into a false sense of security. You see the world around. I've just described it in this program. But that said, this also shows that what we have as a president right now is an individual with king-like authority, and he wants to build the empire, and he wants to send a message in the building of these structures. Listen to Jesse Waters from last night, clip 6.
The best way to blow off steam after a long week, throw a party. Tonight, Trump's hosting a rager at the White House ballroom, not the big, beautiful ballroom that's still on the side burner. Trump's been in renovation mode. The Gilded Oval, the Rose Garden Club, flagpoles that hit the stars. After Trump coaxed Netanyahu into a ceasefire, Trump gave him a 40-minute White House tour. Aides say Don the Builder's obsessed with making the people's house perfect. Trump's a perfectionist, and not only does he have to have everything look beautiful, it has to sound beautiful too. POTUS is installing new surround sound. It's been battle tested. He picked the same one that's been rocking Mar-a-Lago. Trump's built beautiful architecture. What have Democrats built besides 7 car charging stations for $7 billion? Have you seen Obama's library?
There's Obama's library. What a difference. I mean, they're in plain view. You can see a message. This looks like some kind of a, you know, Star Wars machine or something. By the way, touring through UVU the other day, it's just a lot. I mean, the area where Charlie Kirk was assassinated, it's a nice little area with some grass and some water features and such. But then surrounding all of that is just concrete rectangles. It's kind of depressing. If it wasn't for the mountains of Utah on the one side and then Utah Lake on the other, now that was beautiful. But I just was walking around comparing that campus with this campus, God's campus, the campus you see behind me. God is a builder. And so when you look at what President Trump wants to do, you consider his vision. I mean, it's inspiring. Good for him. Good for him. Empire, as we heard a message during the Feast of Tabernacles, as I say, on the subject of architecture and how that there he went through Frank Lloyd Wright and talked about the British Empire and how that the British Empire, when it was at its peak, it projected its power and its influence through architecture as well as other things. But it wanted to replicate what it had there at headquarters in London at the peak of the empire's power. It wanted to replicate that and spread it around the earth. What's wrong with that? You think about that in terms of the wonderful world tomorrow. So many of us have been studying that vision over the last week and a half. And it's glorious. It's beautiful. It's uplifting. That book is all those things as well. Make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy. Isaiah 61 and verse 4 says, "And they shall build the old wastes. They shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of many generations." That's a prophetic verse referring to the wonderful world tomorrow. And of course, we're getting a foretaste of this even on the campus today. Here at God's headquarters on earth, the college, Herbert Armstrong College. We're in our 25th year. And 25 years ago, this was just an open field. Today, there's waterworks, there's ponds, there's trees all over the place, green grass, and God's just blessed us with more rain. It's typically pretty dead right now. August, September, October. But we've had twice the amount of rain we usually do this year, and you can see it. All these beautiful structures. And it's not finished. I mean, we're still building. This work from the beginning, raising the ruins. Read about it in Amos 9 and verse 11 and 12. We're builders for God, and there's a message even in the buildings. Obviously, the spiritual building is most important. All of that beautiful literature, that some of which we've shown you today, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, Mystery of the Ages, The Incredible Human Potential. I mean, these are glorious vessels. And God wants us to have beauty and peace and joy in everything we do, in the physical realm and the spiritual too. And that's what you see in God's work. That's what you expect in the World Tomorrow booklet. It says another tremendous project on the worldwide international level will be that of rebuilding the waste places and the construction of whatever really great and large buildings or structures Christ will require for the world he will create. A beautiful and peaceful world is coming, and God is going to project his power, his influence, his beauty, his perfection, even in the physical structures of tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. I took you a minute over, but I won't charge you for that. Not this time, anyway. We'll see you next time.